Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast. This is South Cox. Happy to be back here with you guys. I'm sorry for the delay. We have been nose to the grinding wheel on the new DVD, Return to the Backcountry. And I'm happy to say we are uploading files. Actually started last night, and I see that three of the six have successfully uploaded to Dropbox. I don't know. My employee JB, who's doing the editing, must be operating on dial-up or something, because he was commenting, texted me last night, Sunday night, and said that it said 2,200 days to upload when he first hit the, you know, upload button. He was laughing, and then it reduced down to about 4 hours. But for some reason, only three of the six files right now are sitting in Dropbox. But we're sending them over to Cody Kellum. They're at Born and Raised Outdoors. He's going to create our menu page for us, hopefully today, then get that off to the duplicator. And I'm hoping by the end of the week, man, I'm going to have some DVDs and flash drives done. And so what we're doing is I put up kind of a poll, if you will, on Instagram and Facebook, and asked people to contribute. And I was looking at doing either a standard def DVD like I did on the last one, Stalkers in the Backcountry. But what I really wanted to do was, you know, offer it in HD. But, you know, I know that a lot of people that in this day and age don't do DVD players anymore. And I know, you know, I've got kind of an interesting niche, I guess, market in that, you know, there's a lot of old school guys and that are still going to be operating DVD players, but don't necessarily have a Blu-ray player. So then you have this conundrum where you have, you know, a huge market, a huge part of your market that doesn't have a DVD player, that middle ground that doesn't have a Blu-ray player, and then the old school guys who have a DVD player but may not necessarily have a smart TV to be able to play a flash drive off of. So we went ahead and I looked into doing a standard def DVD and a flash drive combo pack. I was going to do them separately, but then, you know, a good portion of the cost is the jacket and the printing. And so I just looked into doing a combination of the two, and then I, you know, have to stock half the amount of SKUs there and offer it as a combo pack. Then, hey, if you know what, if you are buying the DVD and you have a, you know, if you're new school, then use a flash drive, give away the DVD to a buddy or something like that, or have both. So I think it's going to work out all right. I'm hoping that the reception, you know, for it is good. And I'm going to continue, you know, down the road here to look at digital downloads as an option as well. I kind of got squashed when I first looked at it, but then some people kind of enlightened me that there's, you know, other ways to do it other than what I was first, you know, the avenue I was first exploring. So look for that down the road, but it is going to be a bit. I've got a substantial investment in this project. I need to recoup some of that. And so we'll probably go, you know, go through some of these DVD flash drive sales first, and then start exploring the digital download part. So if you're antsy to get it, I'm going to have it up on pre-order by the end of the week. I talked to my web guy last night, and he said Thursday, you know, so it's getting closer to that, but, that's what around, I don't know, the 20th or something like that, that it should be up there for, pre-sale. And I'll plug that on social media so you guys won't miss it. And I'll be offering like a combo pack on the DVD. So there'll be a discount, you know, available for the Stalkers in the Backcountry if you bought it in combination with the Return to the Backcountry. And then additionally, I have a really, really good pig hunting video, Glory Hog 2, that, you know, you really have to see to appreciate, even if you're not really that interested in pig hunting. So that one will be thrown on there for like, you know, $20 for the Return to the Backcountry, $30 combo pack for stalkers in the backcountry and Return to the Backcountry. So that's, you know, save you $5. And then I'll probably just throw on the Glory Hog 2 for another $5. So it'd be $35. So you save yourself, you know, conceivably $15 if buying the combo pack there. So a lot of trad all mixed up there if you get all three of them. So I just want to bring you guys up to speed on that one. That's a major relief. We'll be able to get back to full force, you know, 100% focus building bows instead of getting constantly sidetracked, working on the editing on this thing. Man, what a major project, but I am super thrilled on the way it came out. I couldn't tell you how happy I am. The really huge step up in photography or video, you know, videography quality, really good music that we picked out to go along with it. So I think that this, you know, all together came together extremely well. Can't wait to hear you guys' feedback on it. Let's see. We're going to, if you've ever watched public television or listened to, you know, public radio and they do those fund drives. Well, I'm not going to do a fund drive. What I'm going to do is a review drive here. So, you know, I'm not reaching out to you guys with your hands out, with my hand out and asking for something for nothing. So I'm going to do a giveaway and I'm going to do a giveaway monthly. And so I'll draw the winner at the end of the month. Or actually the beginning of the month, I'll draw a winner and, you know, I'll change up the prizes and stuff. I'm going to talk to a few of the different companies that I work with. I'll bend Gold Tip's ear and maybe Sitka and stuff like that and see if we can't, you know, step up the game here. But initially what I'm going to do with this one is I'm going to do a DVD pack from Stalker. So you're going to get all three DVDs. You'll get a Western Bowhunter t-shirt, which incidentally is going to be compliments of Ryan Stedman, one of the listeners and a good buddy of mine. He actually, I built a riser for him a while back and he, and I apologize to him because he threw this offer up, you know, a couple months ago and I just kept forgetting to put it on the podcast there, but he paid for a t-shirt and said, hey, use this as a giveaway. So we're going to throw in that t-shirt he is doing as a giveaway. And then we're also going to do a Western Bowhunter podcast, laser engraved, you know, stainless steel coffee mug there. You know, like a, I don't know, what are they, 32 ounces or something. It's one of those trophy sized ones. So that'll be coming off of our laser here. I'll put up some pictures on social media at some point here and show you guys what that'll look like. But so we're looking for some 5-star reviews. I appreciate that in advance. And you're going to need to leave a comment, not just do a review, because I won't know unless you put a comment on there and put your name on there. It doesn't have to be, you know, your real name. I can, if you throw a tag out there, then I can, I'll call you out on the podcast here next month when I do another one. And then I'll ship you out all the goodies here. So I hope you guys step up there and let's get some more exposure for the podcast there. Lastly, man, so I've been going down and shooting some of the ranges, somewhat local ranges. I went down to, what is it called? There's a range west of Denver, going out towards Fairplay, and it's, doggone it, I don't remember the name of it. Beautiful course. Way out there, you know, maybe an hour drive from Denver. So, geez, it was like 2.5 hours each way for me. So real commitment and time. I went down there and shot that with, Aaron Snyder and Luke from Gladiators and Frank the Tank and all that. And JB came with me and we had a blast down there, early one. I think it was a Saturday morning there a couple of weeks ago. Been shooting the league shoot there in Golden, Colorado at the High Country Archers down there. And that's a beautiful course, man. What an incredible setup for a city sponsored course, just little rabbits running around all over the place and, you know, a whole bunch of 3D targets. So they've got a league going down there every Wednesday night. Again, though, that's like an hour and a half drive for me each way. But when I was at the CBA banquet earlier this spring up there in Fort Collins, I bid on a silent auction prize there. And one of the group of prizes was a membership to Game Lines, which is an archery range, year-round archery range in Boulder. And it's actually up above, on the mountain above Boulder. And I got to say that this range is the most awesome year-round 3D range I've ever shot by far. I mean, it's like I said, it's on the side of a mountain, and you start the course. There's at every station, there's between two and five, actually maybe even more than five targets that you're able to shoot. So it's not like you know, you go to one station, you shoot one target, go pull your arrows. You get a lot of shooting in. And I don't know how many targets there are in this range. I don't even think I've found all of the courses on this range yet. I think I've skipped one. I was looking at the map yesterday and it's like, man, where's the start to that one? So I think I haven't even shot the whole course yet, but I mean, just from a physical fitness standpoint, you're going to get a workout shooting the course, and then all the steep downhill shots. And I mean, such a realistic hunting situation and really reasonable rates, you know, for joining. It's for a family, it's $95 a year. There's $100, I don't know what, I can't remember what exactly I call it, but it's basically like a support, range support fee. So you can work a day and then you don't have to pay that $100 fee the following year. Or you can just pay it, you know, if your time, you know, is short or more valuable to you than that. And I think an individual membership is like 75 or something like that, if I remember correctly. But, you know, the range is open all the time. You go up there and shoot. They've got a sight-in range, a broadhead range, incredible opportunity and resource there for hunters that are on the front range. If you're not a member of that, man, you are missing out. And I'm sure that there are plenty of guys that live on the front range who haven't shot it before. I was talking to Aaron Snyder, came up and shot it once with me. The first time I just went out, my kid and I, and we took off and shot it early one Saturday morning. And I was jumping up and down so much about it. I talked Aaron into coming up and we had a great time. I left with a few broken arrows the last time I shot it, but by and large, really pleased with the way I've been shooting this year. So I've got high hopes coming into hunting season this year. Well, as I alluded, this is another Patrick McManus episode, and this one we're digging back into a Fine and Pleasant Misery well. This was the first Patrick McManus book I was exposed to back when I was a sophomore in high school, and I specifically remember this story. I did a book report on it. I don't know that I've read it since then. So, I mean, I got an inkling of what it's about, but it should be fun. All right. The two-wheeled ATV. My first all-terrain vehicle was a one-wheel drive, and it could take you anywhere you had nerve and guts enough to pedal it. Most of the other guys around had decent, well-mannered bicycles of distinct makes and models. Mine was a balloon-tired monster born out of wedlock halfway between the junkyard and the second-hand store. Some local fiend had built it with his own three hands and sold it to my mother for about the price of a good milk cow. For 2 cents, or even a used jawbreaker, I would have beaten it to death with a baseball bat, but I needed it for transportation. And transportation, then, as now, was the name of the game. You could walk to some good fishing holes, all right, but when the guys you were on all rode bikes, you had to walk pretty fast. Perhaps the worst thing about the bike, as I called it within hearing range of my mother, was that you simply could not ride it in a manner that allowed you to retain any sense of dignity. The chief reason for this was that the seat was permanently adjusted for a person about 6'4". I was a person about 5'4". The proportions of the handlebars strongly suggested that they had been stolen from a tricycle belonging to a 4-year-old midget. The result of the unhappy combination was that wherever I went on the bike, my rear was always about 3 inches higher than my shoulder blades. I tried never to go any place on the bike where girls from school might see me, since it was difficult, if not impossible, in that position to maintain the image I was cultivating among them of a dashing, carefree playboy. The seat on the bike was the kind usually found on European racing bikes. The principle behind the design of the seat is that the rider goes to beat hell the sooner to get off it. The idea for heel-to-toe and walking races was conceived by someone watching the users of these particular seats footing it back home after a race. To get the proper effect of one of these seats, you might spend a couple of hours balanced on the end of a baseball bat, the small end, put a doily on it for cushioning. Whatever the other guys thought of my appearance on the bike, they had respect for me. I was the fastest thing around on two wheels, thanks to that seat. The bike had a couple of little tricks with its chain that the Marquis de Sade would have envied. One was that it would wait until you had just started down a long, steep, curving hill, and then it would reach up with its chain and wind your pant leg into the sprocket. This move was doubly ingenious, since the chain not only prevented you from putting on the coaster brakes, it also shackled you to a hurtling death machine. Many of the time that a streamlined kid on a bike streaked silently past cars, trucks, and motorcycles on grades where a loose roller skate could break the sound barrier. The bike's other trick was to throw the chain off when you needed it most. This usually happened when you're trying to outrun one of the timber wolves the neighbors kept for watchdogs. You'd be standing up pedaling for all you were worth, leaving a trail of sweat and burned rubber 2 inches wide on the road behind you. The wolf would be a black snarl coming up fast on your rear. Then the chain would jump its sprocket and drop you with a crunch on the crossbar, the pedals still spinning furiously under your feet. The wolf gnawed on you until you got the chain back on the sprocket or until he got tired and went home. The standard method for getting off the bike was to spring clear and let it crash. If it got the chance, it would grab you by the pant leg at the moment of ejection and drag you along to grim destruction. The bike would sometimes go for weeks without the front wheel bouncing off. This was to lure you into a false sense of security. You would be rattling, hell-bent for home past the neighbors, and for a split second, you would see the front wheel pulling away from you. Then the fork would hit the ground and whip you over the handlebars. Before you had your breath back, the wolf was standing on your belly, reading the menu. I spent half my waking moments repairing the bike and the other half repairing myself. Until I was old enough to drive, I went around looking like a commercial for Band-Aids. I hated to stop the bike along the highway long enough to pick up an empty beer bottle for fear people would stop their cars and try to rush me to a doctor. Even on one of its good days, the bike looked like an accident in which three people had been killed. Much as I hated the bike, I have to admit that it was one of the truly great all-terrain vehicles. It could navigate streams, cross fallen logs, smash through brush, follow a mountain trail, and in general do just about anything but climb trees. Several times it did try to climb trees, but the damage to both of us was sufficient to make continued efforts in that direction seem impractical and unrewarding. Our bicycles in those days were the chief mode of transportation for about 90% of our camping trips. Occasionally, even today, I see people using bicycles for camping. They'll be zipping along the road or on 10-speed touring bikes, their ultralight camping gear, a neat little package on the rear fender. When we went camping on our 1-speed bikes, it looked as if we had a baby elephant on the handlebars and the mother on behind. Loading a bicycle for a camping trip was not simply a remarkable feat of engineering, it was a blatant defiance of all the laws of physics. First of all, there may have been ultralight camping gear in those days, but we didn't own any of it. Our skillet alone weighed more than one of today's touring bikes, and a bedroll in cold weather, even without the feather bed, was the weight and size of a bale of straw. The tent was a tarp that worked winters as a haystack cover. A good portion of our food was carried in the quart jars our mothers had canned it in. Then there were all the axes, hatchets, saws, machetes, and World War II surplus bayonets, without which no camping trip was complete. And, of course, I could never leave behind my jungle hammock, the pride of my life, just in case I happened to come across a jungle. The standard packing procedure was to dump most of your stuff into the center of the tarp, roll the tarp into a bundle, tie it together with a half a mile of rope, and then find nine boys and a man to lift it onto the back fender of the bike. Anything left over was rolled up in the jungle hammock and tied to the diminutive handlebars. The hardware was distributed evenly around the outside of the two massive bundles just in case you had a sudden need for an axe or a bayonet. Then you sprang onto the saddle and pedaled with all the fury you could generate from 98 pounds of bone and muscle. The bike would howl in rage. The twin humps of camp gear would shudder and sway like a sick camel. And slowly, almost imperceptibly, the whole catastrophe would move out of the yard and wobble off down the road on some incredible journey. Sometimes, during the winter now, when the cold awakens in my bone and the flesh of the ache of a thousand old injuries, I suddenly will recall in vivid detail the last few terrifying moments of the bike's existence as a recognizable entity. A ragged gypsy band of us had begun another trip into the mountains on our camel-humped ATVs. As usual, I was far out in the lead, the hatchet-head bicycle seat urging me on. There was a hill about 3 miles from my home called Sand Creek Hill, a name deceptive in its lack of color and description. By rights, the hill should have been called Dead Man's Drop or Say Goodbye Hill. Loggers drove their trucks down it with 1 foot on the running board and 1 hand clutching a rosary, even the atheists. Just as I crested the hill and started my descent, whom should I notice coming up it but one of our neighbor's wolves, apparently returning home after a hard night of killing elk in the mountains. From 50 yards away, I could see his face brighten when he caught sight of me hurtling toward him like doom on 2 wheels. He crouched expectantly, his eyes happily agleam. The chain, not to be outdone, chose that moment to eat my pant leg halfway up to the knee. I expected to be abandoned by the front wheel any second. The washboard road rattled my bones, axes, saws, and bayonets filled the air on all sides, and the great straining mass of the rear pack threatened to collapse on me. With one last great effort, I aimed a quick kick at the wolf, ripped the pant leg free, and threw myself into space. I bounced 4 times to distribute the injuries evenly about my body, and finally, using my nose for a brake, slid to a stop. The bike apparently self-destructed shortly after my departure. Probably the front wheel came off, but the 2 packs took it from there, ripping and tearing, mashing and grinding until there was nothing left but a streak of assorted rubble stretching off down the hill. Even the wolf was somewhat taken aback by the impact of the crash. He stared at the wreckage in silent awe, almost forgetting my one good leg he held in his slack jaws. When I was up and around once more, my mother bought me a car, my second ATV. She got it from a local fiend who built it with his own 3 hands, but that's another story. All right, that wraps up the 2-wheeled ATV from Patrick McManus. Not the best one of his works there, as far as from a gut-wrenching laugh standpoint, but we'll get another one going after the next episode. Appreciate you guys' time.
If you've enjoyed listening to the Western Bowhunter podcast, please subscribe and take a few seconds to review the podcast and share it with your friends on your social media platforms. This will help us in the podcast rankings and will help us grow. If you have a topic or a person you'd like to hear from in a future episode, please email south@stalkerstickbows.com with podcast in the subject line. You can further support the podcast by picking up a Western Bowhunter Podcast t-shirt or a window sticker from the Stalker store at stalkerstickbows.com. Thanks for your support.
Too many years I passed me by. I can't